Welcome to another episode of Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audio Boom, TuneIn, Google Play, anywhere you can find podcasts. Make sure you leave us a five-star review. You can email us with any basketball questions or advertising inquiries at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook at Locked On Bulls. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls. Check out the other podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network as well. I'm Sean Hyken of The Athletic. With me, as always, Cody Westerlund of 670 The Score. And Cody, the Bulls will take 4-2 on the circus trip, right?
Absolutely. Dwayne Wade mentioned before the trip started that 3-3 would be a good trip. I know off air we discussed, like, we could have seen 1-5 or 2-4 from them on this trip because of
set the over under at 1.5.
Yeah, the degree of difficulty with some of these road games at Portland and Utah, for example, where the Bulls went and got quality wins. But absolutely, the 4-2 trip leaves them at 10-6, tied for second in the East with the Raptors and Hawks, trailing only the defending champion Cleveland Cavaliers. But the Bulls are really happy with how they played basketball on this trip, because even in those two losses, they thought they fought really hard in both games, lost a tight one to the Clippers out in L.A., lost a game by 3 to the Nuggets, and I don't think we've had a podcast since then, but the NBA came out the day after the Bulls' three-point loss and said that two calls went against the Bulls and Jimmy Butler in the final minute. So the Bulls, Sean, they could have been 5-1 on that road trip realistically, but they're really happy with how they're playing basketball right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, even the two games that they lost, they were in. They didn't really get blown out in any of those games. I will say, as much as, you know, it's fun to talk about those calls at the end of the Nuggets game that could have gone their way, that maybe could have swung the game, and I think the more important point of swinging in that game was when the Bulls bench unit gave up a 22-0 run in the first 3 minutes of the second quarter. That's something, you know, it's kind of a recurring thing that we've seen, which is that Fred Hoiberg keeps going with that lineup that has the two bigs as Nikola Mirotic and Bobby Portis. You saw it again in the Sixers game. The Bulls were up big in the first quarter of the game against the Sixers on Friday. He puts in the Mirotic-Portis lineup. The Sixers go on, like, I forget the exact numbers, they go on like a 14-4 run, and then Robin Lopez comes back in for Nico, and the Bulls go on a run again, and they basically control the game the rest of the way. So that's something, the big man rotation is something I think that we're seeing that's a little bit worrying on this trip. Just I almost feel like Fred should think about staggering Taj and Robin, because you have to have one of them out there. You can get away with having Bobby out there or having Nico out there, but you can't have both of them out there at the same time. It's like clockwork. The other team will go on a run as soon as they are both out there.
Yeah, and it is an interesting kind of just quandary for Fred, in the sense that the Bulls need to invest in Nico and Bobby both in the form of playing time and just opportunity, because they have a decision, and we'll get to this later in the podcast, but they have a decision to make on Nico in free agency next year. Bobby's a guy that he flashed during his rookie year but hasn't been a consistent basketball player, and they are invested in these guys, and Fred really does like the Gibson Lopez pairing, and that's working really, really well for them. But it does to me seem like a pretty simple fix that you just kind of slot that big man rotation differently for a few minutes and just get rid of that problem, because, I mean, the Bulls are 10-6, and that's an easily identifiable problem that has cost them big time. You know, I mean, they could have beat the Nuggets, exactly like you pointed out, pretty easily if they play even basketball for 4 or 5 minutes to start the second quarter in that game. And it's kind of haunted them several times this year, too. So, like, we're talking about this team, I think, overachieving or doing more than what we thought we would see early in the season. But that just goes to show there's a lot of room for growth there, too. Like, there's obviously the Bulls can get better in many ways, and that's probably the most glaring place they can get better at.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But, you know, overall, I thought it was a pretty successful road trip for them. They, you know, quality wins in Portland, that's a playoff team. In Utah, that's a playoff team. Even the game in L.A., they won against the Lakers. They were coming off a back-to-back. They were missing Dwayne Wade resting in that game. You know, they won games that I feel like a lot of other years they would have just lost.
Yeah, and I think you've mentioned this before, and several people have mentioned it in various places. It's kind of weird, the Bulls winning all these games they should, and not just winning them, but winning them in fairly easy fashion. I know a 16-point win at Philadelphia isn't a big deal or sexy or anything, but it took 53 points from Jimmy Butler for the Bulls to win at Philadelphia last year. And if you remember, I believe the Bulls played a game the next night last year after that game, and Jimmy was so physically exhausted and spent that he was horrible the next night, and they lost a home game, I believe, one or two nights later. So, like, I know you can say you're just kind of picking nits there, but at the same time, like, that does matter in some way that the Bulls are just taking care of business in the fashion they are. And I think that is a good sign to see. It's a little surprising and a complete departure from last year.
Right. And, you know, you're seeing, if you think about last year, they lost to Brooklyn a couple of times. Like you said, they needed to get that 53-point effort by Jimmy Butler to beat the Sixers. And then, they lost to Phoenix once, too, last year. They lost a lot of games that they just could not. You can't afford to lose if you're on the fringes of being in the playoffs like they were last year. They kind of barely missed getting in as the 9 seed in the East. This year, they're taking care of those games. It's like, okay, if they lose to the Clippers, that's fine. The Clippers have been the hottest team in the league so far this season. You know, they lose to the Hawks. The Hawks have been better than them so far. You know, the teams that they've lost to, with the exception, I think, of the Knicks, which, again, that was on an emotional night with the Derrick Rose, Joakim Noah return game coming back from their first road trip of the year. All of these losses you can look at and say, well, okay, I can understand how that happened. There's no loss where you can look at and just say, well, that was just inexcusable, which I think is a huge difference from last year and something that I think Bulls fans should be encouraged about.
Yeah, and that credit goes to Jimmy Butler for continuing to play consistent basketball. It goes to Fred Hoiberg for having these guys probably mentally tougher and more prepared this year, everything he's doing. I know we just mentioned his substitution pattern there a little bit, but for the most part, I mean, he's done a phenomenal job of managing Dwayne Wade and Jimmy Butler's minutes so far this year, I think. I believe Jimmy didn't even have to play in the fourth quarter at Philadelphia the other night, and Dwayne Wade had a few minutes out there where he kind of closed it out and finished with a scoring spree. But they're doing well in that regard. And, I mean, we do need to point out just Jimmy's continued spectacular play. And I know we mentioned this in the last podcast and what's sustainable. I don't know if he's going to average 25.8 points per game the rest of the season. But at this point, I'm not putting it past him because Jimmy is just playing phenomenal basketball. He averaged 28 points on the 6-game road trip. 51% from the field, 41% on threes. He got to the free throw line 58 times in 6 games, and he's doing it in an efficient manner every single night. And I mean, I don't put anything past him at this point because we know what his work ethic is like, and it seems like just having Dwayne Wade around him has made Jimmy a smarter, more mature basketball player as well. And I guess the question is, I mean, can Jimmy keep this up? And if he does, I mean, I don't want to put a ceiling on what these Bulls are kind of capable of if Jimmy can be a top 10 player in the NBA.
Yeah, he's playing the best basketball of his career. He's playing like an MVP candidate right now. We've talked about that before. The only thing I'm really worried about is there are a couple of games, like the game against the Lakers the other day where he scored 40, where he was just carrying them the whole time, and once, as soon as he was out of the game, the Lakers would just go on a run. I'm worried that he's going to get worn down at some point, but at the same time, having Dwayne Wade there, you know, gives them another scoring option that they can go to and take a little bit of the pressure off of him. But I don't know. I mean, if he can stay healthy, if Jimmy can stay healthy, and he keeps playing like this, then yeah, I think this, not only are the Bulls solidly a playoff team, they could honestly. The more time goes by, the more I'm talking myself into them maybe even having home court advantage in the first round, which is something I never thought I would say at the beginning of the season.
Have you entertained the idea yet that the Bulls could be the second best team in the East this year?
I think that's going a little bit far. I really like what the Raptors have been doing this year. I think the Hawks are really good and the Hornets. But I mean, there's really not a huge gap between any of those teams. Obviously, Cleveland is far and away the best team in the East, and nothing about that is going to change. I don't think there's any team in the East that could beat Cleveland in a playoff series. But any of those other teams, like, there are some that match up better against the Bulls than others, but there's no other team besides Cleveland in the East that I look at and say there's no way the Bulls could beat them in a 7-game series.
Yeah, and I think the Raptors, I mean, the Bulls have historically played really well against the Raptors, owned them in some seasons. And to me, it feels like, obviously, I haven't watched a ton of Toronto basketball this year, but they kind of seem like they've maybe hit a ceiling as a team, just what they're capable of. And I know DeMar DeRozan's been spectacular this year, but in a way that the Bulls are reinvigorated and are like this new thing, the Raptors are kind of the same old steady, and that's been Eastern Conference Finals worthy And there's no shame in that. That's terrific when you're playing someone like LeBron and having him in your conference. But at the same time, like, I feel like there might still be more room for growth for the Bulls this year, which is why I think they could be better than the Raptors in the long haul. I haven't seen enough of the Hawks yet. I know they beat the Bulls by 8 in Atlanta, and they're a good basketball team, well-coached too. But, I mean, at this point, the Bulls, 11 of their 16 games have been on the road, and they have 9 of their next 12, I believe, at home now. Like, they can make that run and get into second place in the East by a game or two, you know, before New Year's, and then really have something to build on. And obviously, at the same time, they were, what, 21-10 at some point, or 21-11 last year, I think, maybe, Sean, before they kind of just went downhill from there. So we've seen the Bulls obviously start good under Fred Hoiberg for a couple months. This year, they need to sustain it, and I think they do have a lot better personnel and just temperament for doing that this year.
Yeah, I feel like they never looked this good early on last season. There was always just, it was always kind of fits and starts, some ugly wins, and like, you know, Derrick Rose looked okay, and you don't know if he's going to look, or he's going to miss games here, and there's a lot more continuity now in terms of just night to night what you can expect out of different guys, and just in general, this team feels like, this them being good, like, it was not that surprising last year when they had that hot start to the year, and then they fell off a lot. That wasn't very surprising. This time, I think it feels more real, some of the success that they've had.
Yeah, everything they're doing, like we mentioned before, but it feels a lot more sustainable. Like, they can keep playing good defense with that first unit. Lopez,
the offensive
and
rebounding
Gibson
stuff is sustainable. The way Jimmy's playing, yep, I think, is honestly sustainable. Nothing feels like a fluke.
Yeah, exactly. That's a really good way to put it, too. And, I mean, they still can get more, too. Contributions, for example, from Nico Mirotic, who has been inconsistent this year for much of the season. I know he's had some good games. He's done more in some cases of coming out and rebounding better on nights where he's not shooting well. But at the same time, like, they can get more from Nico. So we talk about that second unit. Like, that's where the Bulls can still get better, too. But at the same time, this is timely, too, in the Nico sense, because Casey Johnson of the Tribune wrote a piece today, and we're recording this on a Sunday night, in which he talked to Nico about his future and with the Bulls, and Nico's in the final year of his contract, the 3-year, I think, $16, $17 million deal he signed in summer 2014. So he will be a free agent this summer. The Bulls should have restricted free agency rights on him, assuming they offer him a qualifying offer. But he's also been inconsistent, so the Bulls have a decision the rest of this year as it goes on what to do with him. And Nico reiterated he doesn't want to go back to Europe and play. He likes the NBA. He loves the city of Chicago. And he told Casey that his first priority is to remain a Chicago Bull. What do you make of all that, Sean?
Well, it's going to depend entirely on what kind of money he wants and what kind of offers he gets from other teams, whether the Bulls are going to match it. And I think it's kind of an indictment of how he's been in his first 3 years that we're even having the conversation of, you know, is he going to stay in the NBA? Is he going to go back to Europe? Because when he came over a couple of years ago, he was the Bulls' most highly touted prospect for several years before that. He was drafted in 2011. And so the thought had always been, oh, you know, we've got Mirotic coming over. He's supposed to be like Ryan Anderson, but better on defense. And he just hasn't lived up to that. And so, I think he can be an NBA rotation player, but he's not the kind of prospect that I think he was hyped up to be when he first came over, or before he came over, when he was first drafted and he was stashed away in Europe. As far as whether I think he'll be back, I mean, the Bulls are going to have restricted free agent decisions to make on a few guys. Michael Carter-Williams, who they traded for and has only played in 3 games. We'll get to him in a minute. We've got some injury news on him. He's going to be a restricted free agent, and, you know, and if, assuming he gets back reasonably soon this year and plays well, I'm assuming the Bulls will probably see him as more of a long-term point guard solution than Rajon Rondo. So, you know, they'll probably want to keep him. Cristiano Felicio is also going to be a restricted free agent if they give him a $1.2 million qualifying offer. He's the kind of guy that I could see a team like the Spurs kind of just swooping in and making an offer on if the Bulls have their money tied up other places and getting him away and then him blossoming. That just kind of, he just kind of has that written all over him if the Bulls decide not to keep him, because I think he's good and I think he's a legitimate rotation big man in the NBA. But yeah, they're going to have a decision to make about Nico, and I don't know what decision they're going to make. We'll see what kind of offers he gets. I think he's going to get offered at least $10 million a year, and I don't know if I'd match that if I was the Bulls.
Yeah, that'll certainly be a decision. I mean, that's what the last, 16 games in the season, the last 66 games of the season, he has a lot to prove for his future. But I found it notable. He said, quote, Nico, this is my rookie year. I think I was good. I played on a big winning team with a very tough coach in Tom Thibodeau, with whom I improved a lot. Now the second and third year, it has been hard, but I'm here and I want to stay here. I want to keep improving. So, like, I mean, Nico is very cognizant of his development arc and how it's been stunted the past 2 years, just not improving at the rate the Bulls thought he was. Because you got to think, when the Bulls brought Nico over, they didn't think he was going to be a superstar by any means, but they thought he was going to be an NBA quality starter, a stretch four who would be a key piece of their offense, whether it was under Tom Thibodeau or Fred Hoiberg here in Nico's second year, Fred Hoiberg's first year last year. Like, they thought he was going to be a dependable guy, and he hasn't been yet. So that's obviously something to keep an eye on as the season goes along. But again, Nico reiterating, he'd like to remain a Chicago Bull, wants to stay in the NBA.
And the thing about Nico, though, is he's 26. It's not like he's some young, really raw, underdeveloped prospect that they just don't, you know, that you have to give him time to develop. He came over, he had played professionally for several years in Europe. It's not like, you know, oh, he's just, you know, he's like some 20-year-old kid who, you know, needs to spend some time in the D League, needs to develop. Like, that's not where he is right now.
Yeah, exactly. Another guy that will be a restricted free agent, as you just mentioned, Sean, Michael Carter-Williams. Another guy the Bulls want to get a long look at. They might not be getting to see him as soon as they hoped. The Bulls announced the other day that Michael Carter-Williams had an MRI and a CT scan, and he has a bone chip in his left wrist, which they originally said was sprained back on late October in a win at Brooklyn, and he also suffered a bone bruise in his knee that night. Well, he's going to be out at least 2 more weeks, 1.5 weeks now, I guess, from when we're taping this. But I'm a little concerned about this because the original schedule was a 4 to 6 week recovery, which would bring him back first couple days of December or mid-December. He's going to be out, it sounds like, to at least December 10th-ish now, and probably longer if we read into this. Is it not, Sean? This just seems a little fishy to me.
Well, what I want to know, and what I don't think has been clarified, is was the bone chip new, or was that, like, did he suffer that injury, the bone chip in his wrist recently, or was that just misdiagnosed as a sprain originally on the MRI? Because I feel like this kind of stuff just keeps happening with the Bulls medical staff. Joakim Noah has his knee surgery a couple of summers ago, and then he just is not the same guy the whole year, and it seems like it's more serious than people let on. Mike Dunleavy had the back surgery right before training camp started, and he was supposed to be out 8 to 10 weeks. He ended up not coming back till February, missing the first 50 games of the season. Mirotić, obviously, last year had the appendectomy, and then there was some complications with the surgery, and he was out another 6 weeks. And it was like, I feel like this kind of stuff just keeps happening. And, you know, ideally, this MCW thing is just a little setback, and he'll be back in 2 weeks, like they say. But even once he's cleared to play in 2 weeks, let's say best case scenario is cleared to play in 2 weeks, he still has to get his conditioning back up, because he hasn't played basketball in, it will have been around 2 months by that point. Like, yeah. I don't see him really helping them at all in the month of December, probably not until January at the earliest, even if he's cleared to play before then. So this is concerning, and I know the Bulls have the depth. Like, they've done okay without him the last month or so. Jerian Grant has played well when he's played, and Denzel Valentine has started seeing a few more minutes, and Isaiah Cannon has played well. They've had Jimmy and Wade do some ball handling so they can have Cannon out there. Like, they have options. But MCW, when he's healthy, or at least in those first three games, he was bringing them kind of a look on the defensive end at the point guard position that they didn't really have from anybody else. He's long, he can disrupt the ball, he can get steals, and he's a good distributor too. He can't shoot, but he's a good distributor. Like, he brings something different to the point guard position, and so getting him back will help. But I don't really know what to read into this, but I'm not really optimistic about it.
I think the wrist injury might have gotten lost in the initial scare because the knee was so concerning for Michael Carter-Williams. I mean, he told reporters a few days after, I think, that when he first went down, like, he basically feared that he tore his ACL and would be out for the year.
Yeah.
So, like, in his mind, it was the knee right away that was so problematic, and that's actually what is improving now. And I think he can actually get out and run around quite a bit and actually start on that conditioning and do some kind of spot shooting just with his right hand, because it is on his left wrist and this bone chip that's a problem. But it's probably something I would speculate that the more he complained about it and as it didn't get better over time, the Bulls took a closer look at it and realized there's a bone chip. But yeah, it's weird to say you have a sprained wrist and then have a bone chip in it later. And with all the history the Bulls have, I mean, the Mike Dunleavy thing is worth noting. I'm glad you brought that up, Sean, because if you remember at Media Day, they had given him, I think, like you mentioned, that 8 or 10 week time frame for a return. And Mike Dunleavy basically goes up at the podium on Media Day and is like, no, I'm really concerned about this. I'll come back when I feel like coming back. And I don't really know why they are putting this timetable out there when it's so uncertain. And it's something as important as your back and how much discomfort that can cause a basketball player. So, like, I always remember that and go back to that. But certainly with Michael Carter-Williams being out, Isaiah Cannon will continue to get a lot of playing time. A guy who might get a few more minutes, Jerian Grant. He went to the D League on Saturday night along with Chris Felicio and RJ Hunter as the Bulls had 4 days off. They sent three of the young guys to get some playing time. Grant went for 34 points. Hunter went for 19 points. Chris Felicio went for 20 points, 12 rebounds. And Sean, this was the Bulls D League and continuity in action, I guess, organizational continuity.
Yeah, this is exactly what you want to see the Bulls doing when they have a few off days, send some of these guys who are kind of fringe rotation players or not rotation players down to the D League to get minutes. If the team isn't practicing that day, send them down to get reps. They've already called all three of them back up. And Jerian Grant, by the way, I think he's too good to be in the D League at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of find it funny. It's cool that he went down there and scored 34 points. Like, that's like going out there and being like, yeah, I don't belong here. I'm a lot better than all of you. And I didn't see any highlights, but I was reading the story on it and stuff. And yeah, Jerian Grant's a lot better than D-leaguers. So, you know, the Bulls have stacked their summer league roster before, though, Sean. We saw that last year. I'm pretty sure we were the first ones to tell you guys that they were probably going to go undefeated and win the championship.
Are they going to go for the repeat? They did, so, you know. Are they going to go for the repeat in July?
Yeah, they really should. I mean,
Are we going to get Fred a different victory in Vegas shirt to flex at practices?
Yeah, I don't think he's worn that since training camp.
No, he wore it. He wore it at practice in Portland.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah, he did.
I feel like that's one of those shirts you can only wear between Memorial Day and Labor Day or whatever.
No, he was wearing it at practice in Portland. Last week he just comes out of the gym at University of Portland. He's wearing the Victory in Vegas shirt. So he's got to just set
that's
the tone.
Amazing.
He's got to set the tone.
You got to keep the legend of the Summer League Championship going, and that's the best way to flaunt it, I guess. So that is good stuff. I think that takes care most everything we had for you guys. We're going to take Monday off for the podcast and be back. Sean, you're returning Tuesday to the Chicago area.
Yes, we will record in person. There will be no more of these. I mean, I'm sorry about some of the audio issues we've had over the last couple of weeks while I've been out of town and we haven't been able to record in person. That stuff's all going to get fixed going forward. The Bulls are going to have a lot of home games in December. We'll probably get more into what their schedule looks like over the next month in the next episode. They've got a couple games this week, and we will be back with you soon.
Yep, and remember, you can follow us at Locked On Bulls on Twitter. Follow Sean at Hyken. Follow myself at Cody Westerland. Most of all, subscribe to us. Leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or on Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn, anywhere you can basically find podcasts. That's where we're at, Audio Boom. Thanks for listening, as always, and take care.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.